Welcome to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Mary Beth Maziarz.
And I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
Shireen Dazadi is a recognized, award-winning leading entrepreneur in North America who has garnered international coverage and visibility for her achievements, mostly notably featured on Forbes.com.
Her story began with a courageous leap, leaving behind everything familiar, including her family, to build a meaningful life in the United States. Even when she was working as a gas station cashier, she believed her tenacity would empower her to become a success. She paved her way forward relentlessly, becoming a respected CFO and later a transformative entrepreneur and CEO. Shireen Dazadi, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, this morning, we're excited to speak with you about your new book, The Unexpected CEO, My Journey from Gas Station Cashier to Billion-Dollar CEO. And I love that title because I think I may never look at a gas station cashier the same way, knowing and remembering the incredible potential within each of us, no matter where we are. Let's start with that and tell a little bit about your journey to America and how you launched out of your earliest days.
Oh my gosh, you hit the nail on the head when you mentioned the title and that, you know, we'll never look at a cashier at a gas station the same way again. This is really part of the reason I wrote this book. I was born and raised in Iran to a very loving family, youngest of five. And I was raised prior to the revolution in Iran. So it was a very comfortable, you know, normal environment. And of course, the revolution brought with it a lot of chaos, including lots of rights taken away. I was arrested a couple of times, once because they just didn't like the way I looked, I guess, as I was walking on the street. And the second time they stopped us and I owned a book and they didn't like that. So we ended up in solitary confinement. Isn't that interesting? I hadn't thought about that until recently. And I'm like, well, I wrote a book. So there you go. Way to pay back. So there was that. And of course, the war happened in Iran, which was very unsettling. And to us, might as well have been World War III. With all of that, when I graduated high school at 17, my parents decided, to me seemingly overnight, to send me out of Iran. So at 17, I left everything behind. My parents, my mom took me and then left me in Turkey. But basically, therefore, I had left my parents, my siblings, my family, my friends, everything I knew. I had to pack it all in one little suitcase and leave it all behind. We ended up in Istanbul, Turkey, because that's the one place we could go right after leaving Iran. And there, my mom, like I said, found a place for me to stay in a room with two other girls in a woman's house and left. So here I was, didn't speak the language, had never been on my own. I was a child. I had very little money and really had to find my way through and survive. And I didn't even have a passport, by the way. And so this woman changed a little bit overnight, where not a little bit, a lot, to the point that, let's say, we couldn't even shower. We had to use buckets to shower. And there, I think in time, I found my resilience, hope. I decided that I could make a difference in my own life. And with that, I pursued this idea that I was someday going to be in the United States. So a lot of that in the book. Eventually, I did find my way to the United States and landed at Los Angeles Airport and was excited. But then now what? Right? I still had to survive and I still didn't have parents. There were no cell phones there. And so I started working at a gas station as a cashier. This was a bulletproof glass gas station because it wasn't in the nicest neighborhood. And I had the worst shifts. And I remember really feeling oftentimes demoralized and sorry for myself until one day I finally landed on, wait, maybe I need to change my perspective. Maybe I'm not that unfortunate because at least I'm here. And maybe if I change my perspective and really think that I can build the life that I want, that I'll get there. So I have a story with it. You said that, and Mary, and it reminded me of a story that's very relevant to what you said. I was working as a cashier and I was working to college full time because I wanted to build a life. So I had to study while I was working. And so one day a gentleman walked up to me and took one look at my textbook and said, "What are you studying?" And I said, "Calculus." And he said, "What are you going to be when you grow up?" I said, "I'm going to run a big company." And he looked at me going, "Whoa, you must be nuts because you're like in a bulletproof." So the point is, to your point, it was very hard to imagine somebody in my state at that time, you know, obviously didn't have money, behind a bulletproof glass. You wouldn't look at someone like me at the time and say, "Oh, she's definitely going to make it as a CEO or run a big company." That just wasn't it. But right, I believed it. I knew it. I expected it. And that's what informed everything else I did from that point on in life.
Wow. So I think the turning point, that the crux of that story for me, is that you realized at a moment that you needed to change your perspective or your approach or your attitude. So many people, it feels like, move through life feeling locked into a certain approach or a certain attitude. Can you pinpoint briefly what it was that you think allowed you to have that perspective?
I think a lot of, frankly, adversities and challenges taught me that over time. This is why I really am passionate about promoting the idea that adversity is your superpower. That's where you learn and grow. And the more you face those challenges in life, and you know, the world is filled with challenges. If you start with the smaller challenges and face them and grow through them, you build the muscles to be able to deal with bigger and bigger ones. So I had the muscle memory, so to speak. I had done some seemingly smaller things in life and had made it through. And so I now knew, okay, maybe this is a more monumental task, but is there a way through this? There is a solution to every problem from my vantage point. This is what I had learned. Sometimes, though, you need to redefine the problem. And mm-hmm. So that's what I had learned over time. I do want to say that is another reason why I wrote the book, because I reflected on all of those lessons in life that I discovered. I didn't create them. They exist. These principles exist. How do I help others learn from what I had learned to hopefully take some nuggets to build and grow and accomplish and live the life that they want?
Yeah. Wow. This is quite the story, Shireen. And I feel like, you know, the word resilience is such a catch term right now, such a trendy thing to have on your side, being resilient. And yet, especially with, you know, the way that parenting is going recently, and I know this for myself too, I wanted to make the road very easy for my kids. I didn't want them to have adversity. I didn't want them to experience failures. And I've learned since then that was probably a mistake, and that adversity and embracing failure and all of that is so important to gaining a sense of resilience. And you kind of figured that out on your own. Why do you think you figured it out? Why do you think the light went on for you about reframing the problems?
Yes. So what a great point you raise with regards to wanting to protect our children. I have children too. And, you know, as we've learned now later on in life, we can't avoid adversity. Challenge and change is always here. That's just the nature of life. So good luck trying to avoid adversity. It's not going to happen. So what is the best way of dealing with it is allowing for smaller challenges to be faced and really navigating through those. I believe the reason why I was able to arrive at that, first of all, who knows really how people are made, but also when I reflected on it as I was writing the book, it was about when I was a child, you know, in Iran, and the revolution created situations for us, seemingly small. We've been transitioned to a new school because of the revolution, and I sat in a classroom where kids were significantly more academically ahead of us, even though I went to the school for the gifted and talented. So I felt way behind. And I remember it was a physics class. I couldn't understand a word they said. So I came home after a few weeks with anxiety, and I told my dad, I said, "I don't think I can do this. I need to move to another school." All he did was to roll down his newspaper and say, "You know, you can. But I promise you, nobody in that classroom is any smarter or more competent than you. And that's when the light bulb went on. I go, wait, maybe I'm looking at this the wrong way. Maybe I'm looking at this as if I don't have the competence, but maybe it's just new. So why don't I, you know, kick it into gear and study? And I did, and I aced it all, and I was the best physics student. That's where I learned, right? Because it's a small, it's seemingly small, but it's those building blocks that help you later on in life think through and navigate more difficult situations. Long way of saying, let them deal with their challenges, help them, support them, help them navigate, but follow their lead. They need to get through them.
Yeah. I'm curious about your siblings.
Yes.
I mean, it's obvious that, you know, the way that your father parented you and then your own internal fortitude, those two were part of where you are now. But did it turn out the same for your siblings?
I mean, everybody's doing well in their own way. But yeah, we don't have, not in my siblings, we don't have another CEO. Everybody's doing great, though. Yeah.
Well, it wasn't the only challenge you had moving to America and starting without your parents and without speaking the language. Later in life, when you were more established in your wonderful company, you had a health crisis that changed things again. Can you talk a little bit about that and how you were able to use the tools that perhaps you developed earlier in your life to survive and thrive after your health crisis?
Absolutely. It was the best teacher in life, frankly. And I've spoken with people that have gone through life-threatening illness, and many of them, not everybody, but many of them have a similar reaction that it does help you grow. We were dealing with the Great Recession. So the company was in a very difficult situation. We were in the home improvement space, and Great Recession was housing led. So it was very difficult times for us. And we were a few months into it, and I got really sick, and we didn't know what it was. My son came home and had to call 911. I was in and out of hospitals, eventually realized that I had brain tumors that was lodged between my optic nerves. And so there was nothing they could do but surgery, because it doesn't respond to anything else. So I had to get my affairs in order and didn't know going into the surgery whether I would, one, survive, and two, what if I would be able to see, because would result in an optic nerve stroke, so it would become 100% blind. So between those two, it was a very difficult time. 10 hours of surgery later, it was successful, yet about a week after that, I was back up because I had lost all of my spinal fluid. As it turns out, there was a leak in, because it was an endonasal, they had gone through the nose. That could have been sudden death, should have been sudden death, frankly, the way I had. And so they did another follow-up emergency surgery, but nobody can make you spinal fluid. You have to work through it. And so survival was hit and miss for a while. And then after all of that ordeal, I really had to literally find my balance. I had to learn how to walk gradually. And what the entire experience did was to slow me down. I slowed down because I had to. And because I slowed down and had to, I was able to observe. I couldn't talk very well because everything was broken. So I listened. So between those, my senses became heightened. I became more aware of my environment. And I have to say, once I got through it, and the getting through it was one step forward and two steps back, really, it was very gradual. And it was very much about having that North Star of someday being able to be back, being active, all of that, that pulled me through. But once I healed from it, I made fundamental changes in my life for the better. Like life after the brain tumor is much better. And what you asked of my past experiences helped me with that. I was like, well, listen, I was arrested. I lived through war. I was alone in Istanbul. You little tumor is not going to get me.
I love that. And it is interesting, isn't it, how our lessons can kind of build on each other and help in one area of your life and then in other areas of your life.
So true.
How did it affect your work-life balance? Because as a mom, as a partner, you're married. I imagine you have a full life in and outside of work.
You know, Mary, one of the things I did, and it This one is just personal to me. I decided very early on that to me, motherhood was very important. So I always said that I wanted to be a very engaged mother. And I made a lot of decisions, including I worked for a reputable public accounting firm. I left it after a while because I thought, well, one, I won't necessarily know how to run a big company if I keep this up. And also I didn't see a lot of women ahead of me that were mothers. So I wasn't sure if it would be the right environment. It is thankfully now, but back then it was much more challenging. Same when I became CFO, I could have after that, we sold the company. I could have gone down the track of getting another CFO position, but I thought, no, I want to be an engaged mother, and that didn't lend itself. This is why entrepreneurship appealed to me. The point of it all is that it's always been personal life, and my commitment to my family life has always taken priority. Not because I didn't care about my career, but because that is what made me a whole person. And I do believe, and I've said that to my children now, the fact that we were able to, you know, grow the company the way we did. And by the way, by the time I brought in private equity and we grew the company significantly by end of 2019, we were operating out of 12,000 cities, or we were installing 70,000 units a week. This was a sizable organization we had grown and really had significantly grown it the past prior few years. I do believe the main reason I ended up there is that I have my core value of being an engaged mother and a family person guiding me.
Yeah. If you're just joining us on The Mountain Life, we're having a conversation with Shireen Bazadi. She is the unexpected CEO. That's the name of her new book. It's about her journey from gas station cashier to billion-dollar CEO. It's about fleeing Iran. It's about beating brain cancer, a brain tumor, and it's about growing this company. And we should hear a little more about this home furnishings business that you have built into this empire.
Right. So when I went out on my own as an offsite CFO, I ended up eventually meeting a company that was at the time relatively small, but it was like mighty, and it had been around. It was the company in window coverings, the franchising of window coverings. And that's where I stayed for the following 20 years. We grew it as a team. There were lots of trials and tribulations. What I believe we landed on a secret sauce of how to create a business opportunity for that would interest people in investing. We created systems that helped them grow. It took some time, I have to say. It took some time until we hit our stride. And once we did that, we asked ourselves, does it make sense for us to have yet another brand? Are we good at franchising? And so we tested that hypothesis until the Great Recession hit, as I explained earlier. And that was a huge challenge for us. What it did, though, it made us so much better at doing the business we were already doing. We got even better at it because it was difficult times. So after we came out of the Great Recession and continued to grow, in about 2013, it became apparent to us that it really, the desire was for us to bring in an investor or investors and for us to exit because we had been doing it for so long. That's when I set out to find private equity. I was able to bring a really, really good partner in 2015. And so when we secured that agreement, though, the deal was that I had to stay on. That was a part of the deal. And imagine we bring in private equity. We now are of size, and everybody, almost everybody, not everybody, but almost everybody at the C-level was bought out and left. And so here I was, letting people know we're going to be great, we're going to continue to grow, and then I don't have any C-level executives, and the expectations for growth are significant, right? We had brought in investors with growth expectations. What we did was maybe seemingly anti-intuitive, but the first thing we did is I did what I called a listening tour. I thought we've got to find out from our own people, teams, executives, people that are in the front lines, franchisees, and eventually from our customers and suppliers, Who are we? Who do they perceive us to be? And where are we going to go? So by going through that exercise, we not only found areas of opportunity, we also found commonality amongst our teams. They all felt involved and engaged and a part of growing the company. This is why in a short 4 years, we were able to better than double the size of the company that had been around for so long. In addition to that, in an industry that was growing at single digit, we grew it by 70 some percent in a short 4 years. It was engaging everybody and getting everybody to row in the same direction. It was a major cultural shift. And I talk about culture quite a bit in my book and how do you arrive at those significant growth potentials by engaging teams and the organization as a whole.
Well, I can't believe it. We're almost out of time. But I wanted to ask you, we live in a kind of a recreational-based town. It's a lot of people come here for a year, maybe after college, or to be a ski bum or hike and just enjoy mountain life. And they're not quite sure what they're going to do with their lives, but they have hopes. What would be your advice to someone about how to do things your own way, how to move forward and have big hopes, but not feel that they have to do it in the same way that they've always seen? You are an unexpected CEO. How could they become an unexpected CEO?
I love that. As soon as you said they want to be there for a while and just transition, I go, that's great. One of the things that I think I'm very, very much subscribed to is I have the attitude of rebel calmness, but rebel is the word. And that's why unexpected is the way to go. I would say that everybody has their own gifts and talents. So I oftentimes encourage people to take the time to really even make an inventory of what you're good at, because the world will tell you what you're not good at. So don't worry about that. Just an inventory of strengths. And then start visualizing how you want your life to be. It doesn't have to be exactly what I'm going to do, but what is it going to look like? Given that a practice of really leaning into that over time will help you crystallize where you want to go. Create that vision, that North Star, and the rest you'd gradually be able to create. Because who knows, when that girl was at the gas station, she didn't know she was going to be the CEO of a franchise system that was in the home space. And, you know, that's not something you can plan, but you can plan to say, like I did, I think I'm good at structuring and building. I think I'm going to run a big company. In that sense, it made sense to me.
Wow. We have been speaking with Shireen Bazadi, author of a new book called The Unexpected CEO, My Journey from Gas Station Cashier to $1 Billion CEO. And truly, this is a $1 billion company, several billion. It's an incredible story, and it's really inspiring. And it's very, even though your experience is so unusual for many of our listeners, it's still very identifiable, the way you faced your challenges and the way that you've found humanity in all the roles of your life. And thank you so much for being with us on the Mountain Life, Shireen.
Thank you. Yes, it is. It's human. We have so much in common, such common threads, for sure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to The Mountain Life here on KPCW. If you like what you hear, leave us a comment, rate us, and be sure to subscribe to stay on top of all of our show episodes. And if you have an idea for a future episode of The Mountain Life, email us at themountainlife@kpcw.org.